to Comic Talk Today for Tuesday, December 11, 2018. This is the Top of the Pile, the show of the week in which I talk about some of my favorite books from last New Comic Book Day. And there were some really good ones. Really good ones. The week before was kind of a little slower, I think. This past week had some really, really strong books. In fact, three really strong DC books, and one will surprise you. Let's kick off talking about Image Comics Self-Made number 1, written by Bat Broom with art by Eduardo Ferrigado, colors by Marcel Costa. And this is actually a really interesting book. At first, I started reading and I was like, okay, this is cool. This is in my wheelhouse. It's like a fantasy adventure kind of book. But then things change quite a bit. And we'll talk about that. So if you haven't picked this up, I will spoil the little twist, but I won't spoil it fully. So be aware if you didn't pick up Self-Made, and I will tell you when I'm going to spoil it. So when the book kicks off, we're presented with, we meet Taranak, who's a magician, a wizard, I guess, of some sort. We do learn that a little bit later. And he has amassed a large army of people, and they're going to be laying siege on the city of Arcadia. And why, we don't really know yet, but he's got a ton of people there with him, and there's both men and women in this army. And there's one warrior in the army who becomes kind of a central character in the rest of the book. Not kind of, really, probably the main central character. Her name is Amala. And she's like, you know, we're kind of going to all get killed if we do this thing. And the guy she's talking to is like, why don't you tell him? She's like, I can't tell him that. We'll just do it the way that he wants to do it. And of course, they do all get killed. And she's the only one left standing. So all the bodies are laying around, and we get to meet a couple of other characters. We meet Prince Brycemere, who is a total jerk. He's a typical royal. He thinks everything should go his way. And, of course, he wants to find Taranak and dispose of him. And we also meet his bodyguard, Tomlin, who's kind of like what would you say, like a firebender, right? Like Avatar the Airbender, but he can do it with fire. So there's a lot of magical elements in this book. And so they go in search of Taranak, and they're like, you know, in order to get to where he's at, we need to go and talk to these people and see if we can ride their dragon. So they go there, and the prince, being his princely self, kind of demands that this group give him their dragon so they can go find Taranak, and they all get killed. And you think to yourself, man, this is like the beginning of the book. How are they killed? Very easily. There's a little lightning bolt, and things reset. And we see the same interaction, except this time it's Amala that talks to this group, and they know her name, they respect her as a warrior, and so they grant them access to the dragon to go find Taranak. And so they go find Taranak, there's a tussle there, and we have another reset, as Amala and Brycemere have an interaction. And you're thinking to yourself, what's happening with all these resets? This is like a Groundhog Day type of book? It's not at all what it is. So here's the spoiler. As it turns out, the main events of this book are not actually happening. It seems to be some kind of game that's being developed, some kind of software, and the AI in the game is malfunctioning. And as a result of this malfunction, you're seeing some elements of the game being reset. And I thought that was really well done, because I am a gamer. I do play video games. And of course, this is kind of a thing in games, right? If you do something, you do it wrong, and you die in the game, you go back to a checkpoint, and you try to do it a different way in order to get a different result and continue on with the story. And that's kind of what's going on here. And the character that is Brycemere in the game seems to be either a game tester or one of the developers. And, you know, he's talking to one of the programmers, and they realize there's something wrong with the AI. And I find that really interesting, and I wonder if that's kind of where the future of this book is going to go. I haven't read solicits on this, so I don't know if we're going to continue in this fantasy realm, or if we're going to get, like, stories set in different eras or environments based on what they're learning at the end of this first issue. And I thought that was really fascinating. Really fascinating. And I think some people will kind of not want to pick this book up based on the fantasy element alone, because I do know that there's plenty of people that don't like fantasy books, but I gotta tell you, I think there's something really special here, and I think this book could be, just out of the blue, one of the most imaginative things that I've read recently in terms of sci-fi books. Because, you know, I love sci-fi titles, but they are really a dime a dozen nowadays. There are so many coming out, and it's really nice to see a book come out that's really creative and inventive and does something different, but with elements that I'm very familiar with, right? Like, I don't know, this almost reminds me a little bit of, like, Westworld in a way. And that's a show that I really, really enjoyed. Even the latest season, which wasn't as good. But really fascinating stuff. I can't wait to see where this one goes. Self-Made number one from Image Comics is going to be a 4 out of 5. Go pick that one up. I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised. Speaking of pleasantly surprised, let's go over to DC and talk about Batman 60. Yes, Batman 60 made the list this week, written by Tom King, with gorgeous art, by Mikhail Janin and Jorge Fornes, who, by the way, pick any book up that Jorge does, he is fantastic. He's going to be a gigantic name in a year or two, I guarantee it. Colors by Jordi Belair and letters by Clayton Cowles. And what an interesting book this is. I think, I gotta say, the part of the reason I had to put this on this list is purely for the art alone. There is something about the Batman character design in this that I completely adore. The character design is more reminiscent of, like, Golden Age Batman, and I'm talking about, like, early Golden Age, where it's just, like, very simple lines, not a huge, like, muscular build or anything. Just beautiful, beautiful. I absolutely loved it, and the colors are just amazing in this book. The art is a sight to behold, and really, that's not anything out of the ordinary for Batman titles. You know, every issue of Batman is aesthetically pleasing, extremely aesthetically pleasing. What falls for me oftentimes is the storyline, but I gotta say, I really enjoyed this one, because it does really pick up from some of the events of the last issue. And to me, this seems kind of like a return to form in some ways for Batman, because, and you know, Tom does this every few issues where, like, I'll read them, and I'm like, this is not really how I feel Batman should be. But then something happens, and I'm like, yes, that's exactly how Batman should be, and Tom, you are a freaking genius for doing it this way. And this is one of those things. So, of course, you know, Batman kind of knows that, or has some inclinations that Bane is really running Arkham Asylum, and so his kind of quest in this issue is to pretty much beat up a bunch of different Batman villains, different members of the Rogue Gallery, and try to get information on Bane. And of course, nobody's giving up any information, right? And that's kind of been the long play of Bane the whole time, where he's really running things in the background. And we as readers know that, but Batman doesn't really know that. In fact, he's only started to learn about that very recently. And so he's extremely pissed off. He is beating the crap out of folks. Of course, Kite Man shows up in here because it's Tom King, and, you know, Kite Man is, like, the second character, the second main character in this title. So he does show up, and even Hell Yeahs after getting his butt kicked. So I really enjoy that. But this is a very angry Batman. Very, very angry. And with good reason, right? Because Bane is really destroying his life, every single aspect of it. In many different aspects, right? So he created this wedding that was ruined. He's got, you know, Nightwing got shot. Now he's Rick Grayson. We see in this particular issue, Alfred gets the crap beat out of him. There's definitely some other players going on in the background. And, you know, we've been wondering what happened with Thomas Wayne, who showed up at the end of that page a few issues ago. And we do see him in this issue. And I gotta say, I love Thomas Wayne as a character. He's extremely violent and not really Batman-like. But it was a good juxtaposition here with Bruce, because really, the way that Batman acts in this issue is very reminiscent of the way that Thomas Wayne's Batman would act on that, you know, on the Flashpoint universe. And I thought that was really interesting that that was the case. And I'm sure that's part of the overall plot of Bane, of course. And I thought that was really well done. I thought this issue was really, really fantastic. The interaction between Alfred and the Penguin was amazing. I really loved how much Tom humanized the Penguin as a character. And of course, you know, he lost his wife in the previous issue, so he's kind of down on his luck. And, you know, Alfred's trying to protect him while Batman's out trying to get information. But of course, he's no match for Thomas Wayne. And I thought that was really, really interesting the way that was done. I like the cool, there's like two panels where Alfred is feeding the Penguin and you feed him, you know, little sardines or whatever. I thought that was really nicely done. There's a lot of like really small moments like that that really remind you what these characters are and what they are about and kind of like where their namesake comes from. So that was cool to see. There's one section that I was a little unsure of, because it almost looks like Batman throws Firefly off a building to his death. And I'm not sure if that's the case or not. I mean, there's a couple Fireflies running around, so there's always going to be a Firefly. But I am curious to know if the main Firefly was killed. And it's really interesting to see Batman throw somebody off a building to their presumed death. And maybe I missed it where somehow he was caught somewhere. I do remember he threw his jetpack down, so maybe Firefly caught the jetpack and flew away. I don't know. But that was very interesting. Because, I mean, Bruce is really pissed off right now, right? His life is in shambles. And nobody is giving him information in order to take Bane down. Not even Bane himself. So I think that's really well done. Another thing that I liked that was kind of discussed in the last issue, when Batman punched Commissioner Gordon in the face, I liked how Batman is no longer in good terms with the GCPD. And in this particular issue, you see Gordon take a baseball bat to the bat signal. And that's really interesting because, you know, now we're issue 60. We have, from my understanding, probably like another 45 issues at least before Tom steps away from the book. And I'm really liking where this is going. I've been really enjoying it since 50. There were some downs for me, I think, after the Freeze arc. Some of the stuff with the KGB stuff, for example, while mostly good, I thought wasn't the best, but definitely loved the new direction of this book since 50, and I can't wait to read the next one. So, Batman 60, yes, Chris and Daryl, it's going to be a 5 out of 5. I know, gasp, there's people that just crap their pants by hearing me say I gave a Batman book 5 out of 5. Back on over to Image, let's talk about The Freeze, number one, written by Dan Wickline, with art by Phil Seavey, colors by Phil as well, and letters by Troy Pateri. And this was cool. This was, so I talked about this as a possible pick of the week when I did the Comic Predictor last week, or yesterday, the week before, I don't remember, whatever. And when I first read the solicit for this, I thought, like, are they actually freezing? And that's not the case. People do freeze, but not like literally freeze. It's like playing, what's that game that kids play? God, now I feel so stupid. I should know this game. Like Simon Says, right? Where you have to freeze until somebody says Simon. No, it's not Simon Says. What's the game? Somebody yell at me on Twitter or just send me an email. Yell at comictalk.today. Whatever that game is. Everyone's frozen except the main character of the book. Ray Adams, he's kind of like a nerd at large, is what I like to say. He's an IT guy, and he goes under a desk to like reboot a computer or whatever, unplug an Ethernet cable, and when he comes back up, the whole world is frozen. And at first, he doesn't know what to do. He unfreezes. He touches one of his friends. She unfreezes, and she's a little confused. He's very confused, but they start going around and. He like unfreezes a couple other people and they're like, why are you touching me? And this is kind of when he starts determining like, hey, for some reason I have the power to unfreeze people. And there's a pregnant woman there, his friend's sister, if I'm not mistaken. They unfreeze her, take her to the hospital where he unfreezes some doctors so she could have her baby. And she seems to be fine, except the baby is stillborn. Except the baby's not really stillborn. The baby is just still frozen. And they're not really sure why, when he touched the pregnant woman, the baby was not unfrozen. But the doctors decide the best thing to do is to keep the baby frozen because there does appear to be some kind of complications with the birth. And the baby is currently saved because it is frozen in time. Of course, they do travel around and they get to meet some other people. They do see, like, plane crashes, for example, that have happened as a result of these freezes. The, car crashes on the road or whatever. I thought it was really quite interesting. And a very interesting premise. Somewhat post-apocalyptic, but not really. Because it's very early on, right? Like, the freeze just happened. But I think this is another book that has a really strong premise. And based on the execution of this first issue, a lot of promise to be a really great title. And I don't know if this is meant to be a miniseries. I always assume nowadays that they are. But I could see this kind of story really working out in the long term where, you know, if Dan is allowed to tell the story for 25, 30, 50 issues, and I'm sure he would love this book to be successful enough to do that, I could really see going into really interesting places. and maybe dive a little more into this post-apocalyptic stuff that I really enjoy, but, you know, allow the story to breathe enough where you get to see some of that stuff. And I think I was really, really impressed with this first issue. And like I said, it shows a lot of promise. I want to see where issue two goes, if we continue going down this rabbit hole. And if we do, this could end up being a really strong book for me going forward as well. So The Freeze number one is a 4 out of 5. That is from Image Comics. Over to Marvel, the only Marvel book on the list this week is Winter Soldier number one, written by Kyle Higgins, with incredible art by Rod Reese, letters by Clayton Cowles. And I'm going to say this, when I saw the cover to this particular issue, I did not want to read the book. And that's probably not the right thing to do. But here's the thing. So even though I don't go to the comic shop as often to pick up physical copies, I still go like once a month to get some stuff. But even though I don't do that, if I were to go into the shop and somebody says to me, hey, the new Winter Soldier book is out, I'd be like, cool, I want to read that. I like Winter Soldier. And then I go to the shelf and I see the cover to this book, I probably would not have picked it up just simply on the cover. And I apologize to the cover artist. I didn't even check who it is. It might even be Rod Reese. I don't know. But I did not enjoy the cover. However, once I opened it up, I was extremely pleasantly surprised. And I gotta say, there's like this really strong Bill Sienkiewicz quality to this book. And that is really high praise, because I love Sienkiewicz's stuff. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And you know, Rod Reese's art is very similar to that. Letters by Clayton Cowles, if I had not said that, by the way. And I really enjoyed it. I think it really shines the deeper you get into the book. So the first couple pages seem a little more toned down in terms of the art. But once you get into like flashback sequences and some of the really great action sequences that Kyle Higgins places on this book, the art really, really shines. So, I mean, the art on its own is a 5 out of 5. The book, maybe not so much. But I think the reason for that for me is because it's a number one issue. And a lot of this, because it's a number one, is kind of retelling Bucky's life story. But I do enjoy the way that Higgins did this retelling of the backstory, because even though myself, as a person who's familiar with Winter Soldier, really knew a lot of the stuff that was happening already here, I think the way that it's told is really interesting and did not detract at all from the story. So shout out for that. As a result, I'll go ahead and give the score for the book as a 4 out of 5. Again, the art, 5 out of 5. Wow. But really interesting story. So we get Bucky's backstory. We get to learn about his ties to some of the other characters in the Marvel Universe. So like Tony Stark shows up in here. He's kind of like fixing Bucky's arm after an encounter with what looked to be some kind of mutant, possibly. Sharon Carter's in here as well. They're kind of forming this Bucky team, I guess, maybe. And I really like that. You know, Bucky's dealing a lot with demons of his past. Because, you know, of course, if you're familiar with Bucky's story, you know that he was made to do some really crappy things. Oftentimes for crappy reasons, right? He was kind of a spy, working undercover for the Soviet Union. And then, you know, now he's trying to come onto his own. And there's ways that he tries to do that, right? To be his own person. Like, he likes to do meditation. I think that's cool. But part of the meditation is to kind of learn to cope with some of this stuff that he's got in his brain that he can't quite make out, right? So some of the flashback sequences that we see when he was being experimented, or maybe after missions, for example, that's stuff he wants to deal with. And they're repressed memories, and he wants to bring him out so really he learns who he is and the kind of things he's done, because he really is out for redemption. And I like that. I think that's great the way that they're doing this. And in many ways, it reminds me a little bit of like Nightwing or Red Hood. I don't think the execution of this is as good as Red Hood, but I do like that they're trying to make Bucky be more his own person instead of just living under the wing of Captain America. And there are a couple pages that hint to that, right? Where, you know, Bucky's been Cap before, and Tony even makes a joke about there being like 7 or 8 different people that were Captain America. So I like that whole thing. And there's a reveal at the end of this book, which I thought was really interesting. If you are familiar with Bucky for quite a while, the character will look very familiar. And it's a brand new character that shows up, but definitely has ties to Bucky's past. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how that plays out. I really, really enjoyed this book, and I hope that you'll give it a shot as well. There was a book recently. It wasn't the Marvel 2-in-1. I can't remember what it was, but it had Winter Soldier, and I think Hawkeye was in it, and Black Widow. Really fantastic. I think Rosenberg wrote that. Really enjoyed that one. So it's nice to see Winter Soldier get his own title. I don't know how long it'll last, but I'm definitely in for the long haul on this one. Again, Winter Soldier number one is going to be a 4 out of 5. All right, back to DC. And I saved these two books for last for a particular reason. The particular reason being they're both written by Geoff Johns. Because I love Geoff Johns. I love Geoff Johns. Let me say it one more time. I love Geoff Johns. I know some of his books have been kind of the subject of ridicule a little bit because they've been delayed for whatever reason. So, as you can imagine, I'll be talking about Shazam number 1, which was delayed but only a week, and then Doomsday Clock number 8, which has been delayed multiple times, and the reason for that is completely irrelevant. But I want to talk about these because Geoff Johns still got it, man. That's all I want to say. Geoff Johns has still got it. And let's talk about Shazam number 1 first. Written by Geoff Johns, of course, with art by Dale Eaglesham, colors by Mike Atiyah, and this is a reintroduction to the Marvel family of characters that Geoff Johns introduced in his New 52 run. And of course, we knew this a little bit from the solicits that he was going to go the aspect of family, what it means to be part of a family, in particular with these kids, because they are all living in a foster home. And their foster parents, so far in this issue, seem extremely pleasant. They seem to really care for the kids. And he really manages to sell the aspect of family overall for and what it means for each of these characters. Now, the kids are out on a school field trip. They go to the museum. And while they're there, there's a group of armed robbers that come in. They're all wearing Justice League masks, which I thought was pretty hilarious. And, you know, the kids turn into their Shazam versions and manage to stop these armed robbers. The cops show up, of course, and they're like, "Hey, who are you?" Like, they're coming up with all these names. I can't remember some of them, but some of them are pretty funny, right? So they come up with, like, Marvel Family, Shazam Family, the Justice League Lightning or something, Lightning Squad. Like, there's, like, a bunch of different names. And there's a lot of really funny moments. And I think what makes this book so good, number one, it's very tough to juggle a large cast of characters, right? I've talked about this before many times, where oftentimes a writer is placed on a book, on a team book, because they've done really well on other projects, and a publisher wants to see how it is that they do with a large team book. The thing with team books is they are very hard to do because you have a large cast of characters, and generally when you have a team, this large cast of characters has very distinct set of characters with different personalities, different powers, different abilities. That's why they're a team, right? They each have something that complements the abilities or the personalities of another. And oftentimes, if you have a really great writer, you're allowed to have a fantastic run because you can develop all these characters individually. Now, this is Geoff Johns we're talking about, so he doesn't need to prove himself, but I gotta tell you, this man is on top of his game still. I mean, there is a large group of characters. I can't remember how many kids are part of the Marvel family. It's like 6 or 7 kids, right? Of course, you have Billy Batson, who is the original Captain Marvel. But then you have, you know, all the other kids that he introduced during his run of New 52, for example. And, of course, Mary Marvel shows up as well. There's a pretty funny interaction between Billy and Mary where Billy's like, "Yeah, I'm the team leader." And Mary's like, "No, I'm the team leader." And he's like, "No, I am. I was the first one." She's like, "Yeah, but I'm the oldest one, so I should be the team leader." And I dug that. And then, you know, you see all the other kids say, like, why they should be team leader, right? Like, "I have the coolest lightning power," or whatever. And I like that. So there's a lot of lightheartedness. And I think that's something that, you know, I've talked about this before. When we had Rebirth, it felt like we're going to go in a particular direction with DC Comics. And Shazam really feels like that's the direction we should have gone. And of course, you know, Geoff Johns is very involved in the Shazam movie that's coming out early next year. And it seems like with that film, he's really caught that lightheartedness of the character, right? Because when you really think about it, and I did an episode on Captain Marvel / Shazam, The Secret Origins, a couple months ago, so I recommend you go check that out. Just go to nerdlegion.com and you can search for Shazam and it'll pop up. It might even still be on the iTunes feed or wherever you listen, so check that out. But, you know, the original story is kind of, it's weird, right? So this kid finds this weird place, right? The Rock of Eternity, which does, of course, show up in this particular issue, and meets this wizard who gets killed, but he's not killed, and he gives Billy his superpowers, right? The Wizard Shazam. And some of it is kind of dark, and there's been a couple of iterations of Captain Marvel over the years. One was actually kind of dark. It was, I think it was done in the probably late 80s, I can't remember exactly, maybe early 90s. It was very dark, very grim and kind of depressing in many aspects. And this does capture some of that, but all these kids love life so much and they love each other so much that really the aspect of family is the central takeaway from Shazam number one. And I love that. I love that because we don't see that enough in comics, right? Oftentimes these heroes are put in dire situations, right? I haven't talked about Justice League, Scott Snyder's Justice League in quite a while, but it's one of those things where like, you know, you have a bad guy come in and the heroes defeat him. And well, what do you do next? Well, you learn that this bad guy was working for a bigger bad guy and he's got a bigger plan. So he comes in and then you learn that he had a boss and he comes in and then you find this other character who's even bigger. And like, how much bigger can you go? And then you look at these characters, the Shazam family, and these characters have like ultimate power. I mean, they have so much power and they're kids. And do you remember when you were a kid? Like, part of the reason I read comics is I wanted to be Batman. How can I be Batman? I want to read all the Batman comics so I can be like Batman. Of course, I'm not never going to be like Batman, right? He's like the ultimate normal person, quote-unquote normal. But these kids, like, actually have the ability. And there's something about seeing things through the eye of a kid like this that I think is just brilliant. And the fact that we have a person like Geoff Johns who can write such a diverse cast of characters because, of course, you have male and female characters, but they're different ethnicities, different races. They're kind of different ages, but, you know, they're all kids. And he can get their voice right. He can get the voice of the adults right because he's a fantastic writer. And I really dug the art as well. I think the art is really fantastic. It fits the tone of this book extremely well. And I really enjoyed it. I don't have enough nice things to say about this. Again, it's tough to juggle a large group of characters, but I think Geoff Johns really nails it. There's some things introduced in this issue which I really enjoyed, like the station. So we're going to see the kids maybe go into some fantasy worlds, which I look forward to. Spoiler alert, you meet Billy Batson's dad at the end of the issue, so that could be a really interesting turn of events. But overall, I really, really loved it. So Shazam number one is going to be a 5 out of 5. And since I give that rating, I'm going to go ahead and say this just straight up. Doomsday Clock number 8 is also a 5 out of 5. And I know some people are kind of concerned about the publishing schedule of this book. I am as well. But I got to say, I was able to jump into this issue without any worries about what happened in the last one. Because it's really a fantastic story. The central character of this particular issue is Firestorm. Firestorm is in Russia. He's kind of not in control of his abilities. As a result, he transmogrifies a bunch of people. He turns them basically into, I don't know if it's stone or metal, whatever, right? But they're like statues. And this leads to an escalation because it's in Russia. So, of course, Putin shows up. And I heard that this was released in Russia before it was released in the U.S. Some kind of thing. I don't know. Russia can be weird, I guess. Sorry, Putin. Don't get mad at me. But apparently, if Putin is in a book, in a comic book, it has to show up in Russia first for some reason. Anyways, so I know that some people had already somehow found the copy of this. I guess in Russian? I mean, it wouldn't be in English, right? Anyways. So Putin's a big thing of this, at least an escalation, a military escalation, where it could cause issues between the U.S. and Russia. And of course, that's kind of a thing going on right now in real life. And so the government decides that, you know, they're going to go out and search for Firestorm. And Superman, of course, kind of works with the government. So he goes out in search of Firestorm. And I really like that because he's like traveling around the world. He goes to Kandak and has a really awesome interaction with Black Adam there. Black Adam has created this like, utopia for metas, right? So it's very like Magneto-like, right? Where you know, he has created a safe haven for people where they can use their abilities and not feel like they're judged, because there's definitely a lot of escalation going on based on some of the themes of Watchmen, for example, where metas aren't really wanted in the general public by quote-unquote normal people, or people without abilities. But yet in Kandek, they're able to be whoever they want to be. And there's a really cool interaction there. And I think it really humanized Black Adam quite a bit for me. I mean, he can be an interesting character, but I really like the way that Geoff Johns did it here. And of course, Black Adam has some kind of history with Superman, so if you're familiar with that kind of interaction, then I think it really adds something a little special to it. And it's very tense, by the way, when Superman and Black Adam are chatting, and I really enjoy that. And of course, you know, Firestorm is not at Kandak, but Superman does end up finding Firestorm and kind of helps him control his powers. He's trying to figure out how to bring this kid back from a metal statue into just being normal again. And Superman helps him with that. The kid gets turned back into a person, and Firestorm decides to go back to Russia and, you know, correct his wrongs. But of course, things don't really go very well. And as it turns out, it may not really be Firestorm. I'm not sure what's going on there. But like, Batman is watching the news and he's like, damn it, Clark, like, that's not Firestorm. So he's on his way to Russia, and Firestorm loses control once again. And then at the end, you see that Ozymandias is the one pulling the strings here. So I thought it was really, really fantastic. A very tense issue. I was literally on the edge of my seat reading this. I absolutely adored it. And Gary Frank, good lord. I mean, this man can art the crap out of a book. That would be the episode title, but it's not going to be. He is just absolutely fantastic. And I got to say, you know, there's often talk about the schedule for this book. Man, I don't really care anymore. Like, just let them do whatever they need to do to get this book out and do it the way that these last couple of issues have been. I think Doomsday Clock is just absolutely fantastic. The last couple of issues, I think, really corrected things quite a bit for me in terms of story, where I'm starting to really understand where it is that we're heading. And, you know, we have four more issues, so I don't know how long that's going to take. We probably won't see issue 12 till next summer. But I'm okay with that, because when each one comes out, it's just, it's like a sweet morsel where I just want to bite into it and just chew it in my mouth for as long as it takes. And if it means I'm going to chew it for the next 3 months, then so be it. Doomsday Clock number 8, 5 out of 5. All right, that's going to be it for Top of the Pile. I want to talk about some books that are coming out tomorrow on New Comic Book Day, and it's going to be a goodie. It's going to be a real goodie. First up, we've got Planet of the Apes, Simian Age number 1. This is from Boom Studios. And the reason I'm putting this on the list is because Matt Kent has a story in this book. There's, I believe, 3 stories in Planet of the Apes, Simian Age. Matt Kent is doing one. We've got Jeff Jensen's doing one. And I can't remember the other writer. Dang it, I should have written this down. But Matt Kent, number 1. I love Matt Kent. Number 2. Matt Kent is probably the number 1 Planet of the Apes fan. This is a fact. Go ask him about Planet of the Apes. I guarantee you, he knows everything about Planet of the Apes. So as a result, I'm very excited to check this out. It is a $7.99 book, which I wish they would not do that. You know, even at $5.99, this would have been a good price. But, you know, whatever. $7.99, I guess. It's the new age comics. Definitely looking forward to Planet of the Apes. I also love Planet of the Apes, both the original version from the 60s and 70s, and then the rebooted stuff that they've done over the last decade or so. And I think Boom does a really good job with their Planet of the Apes book. So definitely looking forward to this one. From Dark Horse Comics, William Gibson's Alien 3, number 2. And I didn't get a chance to talk about issue 1 when it came out. It was one of the weeks where I didn't do a Top of the Pile because I was so busy. But this is really interesting. So when Alien 3 came out, a movie which was okay. I don't think in any way compared to the original. That's still the best one. Alien 2 was still good. Alien 3 had a lot of issues in my opinion. And the interesting thing about it is that there were like half a dozen different screenplays written for this particular movie. The one that won out for some reason. And I don't feel like it's particularly the best. William Gibson, who is a storied and very popular science fiction writer. He's done some incredible stuff. Check out his bibliography or whatever. What's it called? Whatever that is. His list of books. He's done some really incredible stuff. Really ahead of his time in terms of like the way technology is going, for example. I mean, he was writing about some of the stuff we're facing now in tech, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Really brilliant guy. I love his books. He wrote a screenplay for Alien 3, and somehow Dark Horse is making a comic book adaptation of it. And I really enjoyed the first issue. I'm really looking forward to the second issue. The art is by Johnny Christmas. We've got colors by Tamara Bonvillain. This is really, really quite good. Cannot wait to pick up this next issue. William Gibson's Alien 3, number 2. Over at DC, Batman Who Laughs, number 1, 6-issue miniseries by Scott Snyder and Jock. And I'm looking forward to this one. I think The Batman Who Laughs was one of the more interesting things to come out of Metal. It seems like a lot of people feel that way, and DC does as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this book plays out. And of course, it's got Jock art, and you cannot go wrong with that. From DC Comics, we've also got Goddess Mode number 1. I believe this is a Vertigo book, if I'm not mistaken, written by Zoe Quinn, who is a Hugo Award-winning novelist. And the art is by Robbie Rodriguez, who's done work on Spider-Gwen. And this looks like it could be interesting. It reminds me a little bit of some of the stuff that I said earlier in this episode about Self-Made. It takes place in near future where humanity is kind of taken care of by this godlike AI. And we meet some characters. The main character's name is Cassandra. She's kind of like tech support for this AI. And she discovers that maybe there's some stuff going on behind the scenes that the AI is not aware of. And it reminds me a little bit of like The Matrix, a movie which I really enjoy. So definitely looking forward to checking this one out. That's Goddess Mode number 1. Over an Image, Spawn Kills Everyone 2, 4-issue miniseries. I don't even know what this is about, but I love Spawn. I love Spawn. Written by Tom McFarlane. We've got art by Will Robson. And this is, I guess, the sequel to Spawn Kills Everyone, which was kind of fun. And yeah, we'll see how this one goes. This is going to be probably my palate cleanser pick. Over at Scout, a book that I wanted to bring up because I don't feel like enough people are checking this out, and it's absolutely brilliant. Oblivion, number 4, not to be confused with Kirkman's Oblivion. This is OBLIV18N. This is, I think it's a miniseries, or 4 issues in. The plot of this book is kind of weird. There's like this event that happens, and there's all these weird creatures and like weird like cyberpunk tech stuff. And kind of the main characters of this book are younger than 18 because something happens when you turn 18 that's not good. Now I want to spoil it because it's essential part of the book. But it's been really fantastic. It's Ken Christensen writing and Francisco Gaston doing the art. Scout has a really strong line of comics, I think, and this is probably one of my favorite ones. So definitely check out Oblivion number 1. And last but not least, what I feel like may end up being my pick of the week this week, Fearscape number 3 from Vault Comics. That's Ryan O'Sullivan and Andrea Moody. And Andrea is just a brilliant artist, so that definitely helps. This is a really cool story. I know I talked about the first issue, and I feel like it may be time to talk about this book once again. It's about a kind of failed writer who pretends to be his best friend, who is a very famous writer, and gets taken into this magical fairy realm where he has to face humanity's greatest fears incarnate. So a little reminiscent of like The Dreaming, for example, over at Vertigo, but I think much, much better executed. This book is absolutely fantastic. I think every issue's gone to multiple printings so far, so it's doing extremely well. Definitely looking forward to checking out issue 3 of Fearscape from Vault Comics. And that is going to wrap up this episode of Comic Talk Today. Thank you for listening. Of course, if you want to get in touch, at Geekvine on Twitter is the best place. You can always email me, yell@comictalk.today. I'll be back tomorrow with the news. Some really interesting news, by the way. I want to talk about TKO Comics because I got to read some of their books today, and they're fantastic. I will probably do an episode on TKO either at the end of the week or maybe next week. But really interesting stuff. I want to talk about this company and I think why it's doing some really innovative things in comics, among other things. So I'll be back tomorrow with that brand new episode, and I'll catch you then.